difference because the apartheid state and sort of the colonial state before that, you know, had depended on a very strict hierarchy in society. You needed to be told what is the truth, and I know the truth. And if you don't stay in line with what I determined to be the truth, you know, the whole system falls flat. And so, you know, it was inevitable that what would be considered, you know, subversive, in actual fact, had been the freedom that we all were yearning for.
Mm. So if we listen to Rudy, it is about how we tackle the social injustices of our time. And how do you provide educational experiences that will promote social justice and human dignity for all? So his next choice of song is really an anthem for the dispossessed, where Abdullah Ibrahim delivers his signature tune about man or people and mountain, a tribute to the people of Mannenberg as a symbol and representative of all who suffered and continue to suffer the scourges of poverty, gangsterism, overcrowdedness, lack of service delivery, decay. I could go on, but let's rather listen to the song.
Bush Radio, the voice of the community.
to Bush Radio 89.5 FM, the mother of community radio in Africa.
This song is a classic. It will always be an iconic anthem for what we've been through while still conjuring up images of hope. Tell us about your reason for choosing.
No, you know, this, of course, so many of his work is you know, reminds of, you know, of, well, Cape Town and sort of the flats and with all the history and so. But there's one particular life experience that I associate with this song. And that is in 1999, we had the second elections, democratic elections. And in the run-up to that elections, President Mandela Madiba had would call a series of stakeholder engagements. And one of the dinners that he called was with what he then, or what they had decided to be a group of 30 leaders of the colored community. And one of the leaders that had invited to the dinner had been a fellow SRC member, the president of the SRC, in actual fact, Wanoma Michaels. And the two of us had then been invited, you know, to be part of this. Now, you know, we arrive there, and then Madiba introduces at this dinner. But this is actually why he called the dinner, and so there was a conversation at this dinner table around, you know, what it means to be colored. And it was fascinating at that time, in the history of the country, to hear what was happening around the table. And Madiba, why would you consider us colored or not? Why are we then the leaders in your view of this community? And why is this community then separate from other communities? It was a proper debate. And he was simply, his argument was simply to say, but listen, there's a unique community here, which, you know, we are all part of, and we're not hearing your voice, you know. And it was a challenge that he put to the group of people there. For me, it was very special because, you know, well, I was, you know, so I'm, you know, I'm white. I was the only white, you know, for the purposes of that discussion in the meeting. And then he said, all right, you white, to you then pray for dinner. So I looked left and I looked right and I said, listen, is it right if I pray in Afrikaans? So it was a wonderful privilege to have met him there, but to be part of that conversation. So what happens in this song is take me back to the depth of that conversation of identity and who we are. I'm a base, you know, and we bases run across different racial groups. We are white, we are colored, we are black, you know, so to be part of a base family, these questions are on the table all the time. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel out of place in that meeting. Mm-hmm. But this song takes me back to that deep conversation with Madiba.
Well, I was surprised Madiba asked you to play because you are the Reverend Dr. Okay, so for me, this is what I believe Rudy's greatest contributions are. If you've read any of his writings, his book, Brugpowers, his column in the Cape Argus that comes out every fortnight on the Baseline, he writes really about the very hard stuff. Racism, sexism, corruption, crime, conflict, pain and suffering and so on. He always leaves us with a message of hope. His orientation is completely towards finding solutions, problem solving, critical thinking, always offering a way out that is real and possible. We may just have to put in the extra sweat that is required to get to those solutions. But read the type that will tell you it's just not enough to complain and moan and groan. Now, is that right, Rudy? And in answering that question, maybe you could talk to us about your book and what is it where those messages come through very strongly.
So, you know, I irritate myself when I want to complain about stuff. Because, you know, there's a point that one has to sort of say what's in your heart and you have to sort of release the bad stuff and you have to talk it through. But, you know, there's a space for that. When you step into conversation with you know, fellow citizens or compatriots or comrades or so, the point is that we're wanting to bring ourselves to create a different world to where we're at. So for me, it's really always about what you can do, what you're able to achieve, then what's preventing and limiting and so. So dealing with the challenges is simply part of life, you know, and life is a place of hope. Well, the point is, we're South African, we're African, and hope is our thing. We live with hope. That's our contribution to the world.
And that clearly is a message that comes through in the book as well.
So before working at Cornerstone, I had been appointed at Free State University as a facilitator for racial reconciliation. There was the incident at Free State University where it was a terrible racial incident where students had conducted themselves in absolutely insulting and unjust ways to workers. And it's worthwhile for listeners to, that's what's called the rights incident, REITZ, the rights incident. Anyways, and that had resulted in sort of direct white-on-black violence on campus. And at the time, I'd been part of a group of facilitators who specialized in that type of conflict mediation, specifically racial conflict mediation, and we had then joined Free State, and then I'd become dean of students there, and I've then lived through the whole experience from black and white students wanting to kill one another to a place where, you have black and white students living together in residences. And that was a 7-year project, essentially. And so I had sort of written up my own experience of that whole story, if you will, that whole sort of project, which had left me also with my own sort of injuries, if you will. I mean, you never step into that process and out of it without, having sort of lived through your own hurt and pain and angers and all that type of stuff. And so what I had then been able to work with also for my doctoral research was to do interviews with 4 students who had stepped forward as leaders for reconciliation between black and white in the context of the Free State and what had happened there. And what was interesting was that, that it had been 2 women and 2 men, 2 black students, 2 white students, and how their life stories and their experiences of race over time, although they were from very, very different communities, and different sides of history, if you will, how their lives were actually quite similar in the type of experience that they would have. And much of that had to do with them being people who would, for instance, being a black student with white friends, or a white student with black friends, which be different from the sort of from the basic group of fellow white or black students. And so what they would have experienced through their life is to be in between different groups of people, in between, white and black. And so those experiences of in-betweenness over time, they had actually thought, but those aren't good experiences, because, society frowns on you if you're not only white or only black. If you're someone that moves between different communities and groups, somehow you're out of place. And so they had over time thought, assumed that that's a bad thing. And so in this context of violence and conflict at Free State, suddenly they were the only people who knew what it meant and what it looked like to build something new, a new way of building friendships and partnerships across a racial divide. They had experienced it through their lives to be in between. And so they could actually, they were the people that knew best suddenly in the situation where people were wanting to kill one another. And so what had then happened is that we were able to create space for them to step forward and lead. And so I had learned a lot in that process, and that's basically what the book is about. It's called Brugbouwers Afrikaans because to a large extent the storyline in Free State at that point was Afrikaans. And so we first done the book in Afrikaans, and we're now busy with an English translation of it. And anyway, so that's what the storyline really is about. What had happened in the Free State and what I had been part of there is a story that happens at all campuses, increasingly so. And one could only hope and pray that you have bridge builders at all campuses. Really, we sorely need it now. That's no question, especially on Reconciliation Day. Much of my day was I was focused on preparing sort of the next column for Caper Argus. And the point is, you know, what do we celebrate in Reconciliation Day today? If you listen to callers, to radio shows, you know, people are angry. You know, all people, black and white, are angry about stuff, are feeling there's no place for reconciliation anymore. In any case, how we thought about it 20 years ago, we're tired of that. And so the question is, all right, when you talk about differences today, distances economically and politically and so, what does the commitment of a society to reconciliation, to cohesion, actually mean today? What does it look like? And so, I mean, that question is back on the table, I think, and I don't think we have an answer at this point as a society for that question. We've lost what it means to reconcile. Mm. But I think it's such a fundamental part of who we are as a country, as a nation, not only after or during 1994, that transition, but also before that, as part of our deep roots. But what it means and what it looks like today, I think, is we've not resolved that yet.
So it is about learning, and it is about changing.
Learn to change the world.
By enrolling at Cornerstone Institute, you are choosing to join a learning community to change the world. We offer degrees, short courses, and certificates. Go to cornerstone.ac.za or visit our campus to enroll. Change begins here.
Learn to change the world.
Cornerstone is registered with the Department of Higher Education and Training as a private, not-for-profit institution.
Okay, so as we move to the last segment of the show, I think what's emerging very clearly, it's about balance. And finding that balance in life is what most of us struggle with. Juggling work and leisure, business and pleasure, work and home and family time. And some of these are very perplexing. And we just can't get it right. And then it impacts on our mental health. Mm. And somehow if you listen to Rudy and you get to know Rudy, I think we see that he has a very young family, and at the same time he manages to stay on top of all of these challenges of maintaining a balance. If you heard about his complex role at Cornerstone Institute and his life in general. So do you have a formula, Rudy?
Well, maybe just, you know, I now have a 18-month-old daughter, princess, queen, future leader of the world at home. And our boy is now 9 years old, so quite a bit of a distance. But anyway, so my friends are laughing and say, you know, you're a proper opa, you know, having a daughter, you know, and I'm going to be, say, like 65 or so when she's sort of arriving in matric. So it's my plan to stay young, you know. No, but I think as one sort of matures through your life, and I still think I'm got a long road ahead of me in terms of that, but you know, you discover what sort of roles in life, what sort of callings really carry weight. And one of those for me is to be a father. To be a husband and so, but to be a father. You have this immense responsibility of creating a space where people would grow. Now, for me, that's a teaching environment where you teach without saying anything. You know, your life must teach. So for me, you know, when we talk about balance and so, it's much about choosing the life you want to live. And what, you know, when people think, you know, about what you do, they must say, that one is about respect and inclusivity and, you know, building and so. Then it's then the rest fall in place. And I think you know, for, you know, just, you know, this is not sort of a pitch, but at Cornerstone, I'm really so proud of what we're able to achieve to build that sense of pride and, you know, understanding that road, that journey of growing, of becoming more human. I think that's very real, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, we if you listen again, it's about putting family first. And we, at Cornerstone, we do try to create a family vibe, as it were. But certainly putting family first is part of the solution. So you're listening to Community Champions on Bush Radio 89.5 FM. Please send your comments, questions and messages to Bush Radio's WhatsApp number, 061-862-1065. 061-862-1065. So while you're sending your messages, I'm going to ask Rudy to tell us about his choice of final song. I know he has a deep love for the song, and I'm keen to hear what it is that he says the song does in terms of lighting his fire. So let's hear, Rudy, why the song, and what is the song? Introduce it, like you would be a radio DJ yourself.
So, Crossing is a song by Johnny Clegg, and which is, I would say, most likely is you know, globally is sort of most well known sort of song and so on composition. And when he died, sort of a range of artists from all communities have been brought together by this artist called Karen Zoid, and from all over the world. Now, I'm also a Pink Floyd, you know, I won't say disciple, but
a fan,
a proper fan. And even sort of David Gilmour from Pink Floyd had participated, although he didn't pitch in South Africa. He had sort of a recording from abroad and had to be part of the song. So they then performed the song. But what is significant about the song, it says again something about the potential of the nation. But the people who perform it together brings together everyone from every community. I mean I have goosebumps while I'm, you know, while just talking about it. And you find, you know, if you find the most sort of you know, the type of performers that you know, in my sort of what I like in music, that I wouldn't sort of at all listen to, and those that I really love, all are together in the same group performing the song. And, you know, so you have this, all of this different styles and histories and life stories and so coming together and celebrating this song. But it's in the rhythm, it's in the song, it's got the same sort of quality as sort of Weeping. There's sort of deep humanity in it, man. Mm. And that's, you know, that just draws me. I hope, you know, in us listening to the song, we'll hear that.
Let's go. Let's hear that song.
The Crossing.
Cause no one can put him down. Inside him, a boy looks up to his father for a sign or an approving eye. Oh, it's fine how those ones so close are now gone still so affect our lives.
Oh, see, yes, I'm coming. Oh, see, yes,
I'll be coming.
Since so figure where I'm at, no man.
You know the tide is turning.
Oh, see, yes, I'm coming. Oh, see, yes.
You know the tide is turning.
See, I'm coming.
Reverend Dr. Rudy Bates, undoubtedly your contributions to building communities through all the work that you do is indisputable. You are a beacon of hope in what you say and do for all of us at Cornerstone Institute. But more than that, you are the embodiment of the values we strive to live by. Inclusivity, excellence, integrity, unity, respect and creativity. More than this, you more than anybody else I know live out the vision of learning and teaching in service of others to advance social justice and human dignity for all. You are living your legacy, and we are proud to have a community champion of your caliber in the studio with us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Noel.
Any final words that you want to say?
Yeah, I thought, you don't often get the opportunity. I really want to say this, ne? So, we are not defined, our country and our continent, we are not defined by the struggles we live with. We are defined by the hope of knowing one another. Even though we might fight, we know each other. And that's our hope. And I don't have any question that whatever problems we face, we'll overcome that. What I pray for myself and for you and for all of us, is that we don't keep ourselves, locked in. But we sort of, grab freedom. Reach out. Take it. And we can do that together.
Thank you, Rudy. So that's it for tonight, good people. Next week, we feature another great community champion. You cannot miss out on the opportunity to meet one of the most remarkable people I know, Professor John Valmink from Athlone, where he lived up until today. He holds a PhD in mathematics education from Cornell University in New York. Just this week, he was awarded another honorary doctorate for this time from Stellenbosch University. His illustrious career includes being a high school teacher, a lecturer, and a professor. He has served as vice chancellor at various universities and is known for his teaching and research in mathematics and science education. He has made a major contribution to curriculum reform in post-apartheid South Africa and has been asked by all four ministers of education to play a leading role of the transformation of education in the new South Africa. Currently, he is the president of Cornerstone Institute and is also the chairperson of Umalusi Council that quality assures general and further education in our country. Ask yourself, with a CV like this, and I chopped it down to the bare bone, can you afford to miss meeting Professor Warming?